You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, Launch Street, all of us everyday innovators. Tamara here, your experiential risk taker, everyday innovator. That's the style of innovation that I roll with. Hey, do you ever walk down the aisles at the grocery store, I don't know, see an ad on TV or even an ad online for something and you think to yourself, oh, I wish I had thought of that. Or you think to yourself, I wonder how they even came up with this idea. I have this thought all the time, sometimes bad, like really, but sometimes good too, right? Like, oh man, that is brilliant. And I think that's why I get excited about interviewing people who turn out to be those inventors behind those products that make me think that. I think those inventors have a lot to teach all of us about where the ideas in our lives come from, where they can come from, maybe where we should be looking. So here's the kind of little bit of backstory to today's guest. So the other day, I'm at the grocery store and I see this product. It's called Right Rice. It's this kind of in like a black bag. It's this alternative to rice and it's delicious. So in fact, I brought it home and I did what I call the kid test. I don't know if you moms and dads out there do this. It's a test that I do when I swap out one product for a healthier version when it comes to food and I see if they notice. So I don't say anything. And then while they're eating dinner, I check their reactions. If they don't notice, I consider it a huge win. Unfortunately for me, most of the time, they do notice. But this time, they not only didn't notice I had swapped out their regular rice for Right Rice in this kind of chili type thing that I made or stew. So you can imagine my delight, right, when they didn't notice that I had swapped out their regular rice for Right Rice. But not only did they not notice, they asked me for more. They're like, oh, this is delicious. What? So I get all excited when I find those products. So you can imagine my delight when the founder of Right Rice, when his team reached out to me about interviewing him on Inside Launch Street. I was like, yes, please, because I know that he invented something that not only my kids like, but more importantly, that took on a big traditional industry in a new and innovative way. Let me tell you a little bit about Keith, because I think you're going to get excited too. So Keith Belling is the founder of Right Rice, which reinvented rice. They sold over 1 million bags in the first year. Now, I know that intellectually we all get that a million is a big number, but in the product world, that is like an exponentially big number. It is so hard to sell your first 100, let alone to sell a million. It's crazy. And before launching Right Rice, Keith founded a snack brand that took the snack world by storm. I'm guessing you've heard of it, most likely eaten it or about to open a bag of it. It's called Pop Chip, a wildly successful food product. So clearly, he's a proven entrepreneur and innovator. And as you hear in this podcast, he is a master of following a frustration that he has, figuring out a way to solve it in a unique and meaningful way, and then turning that solution into a business. Now, speaking of following a frustration, the question I have for you before we go into this podcast, into this interview, is what's that one frustration in your work that if you solved could have a major impact? Doesn't have to lead to a product. It could be a process improvement. It could be a way your team collaborates. It could be a new revenue stream. It could be all those things. But what's that frustration in your work? You know, the thing that makes you roll your eyes every time, or that annoyance that a customer of your business constantly has that you don't have a solution for yet? So in my book, Innovation is Everybody's Business, which you can pre-order on Amazon right now, I give you a lot of ways to consider how to follow a frustration or give you a new lens in which to see the world around you and find those frustrations and those opportunities. For today, for this interview, as I talk to Keith, and about his frustration and how he turned that into a business, I want you to keep this thought in the back of your mind. What's one frustration in your work that, if solved, could produce measurable results? We all have one, and it's our area of biggest opportunity. We sometimes just need to find it. All right, with that, let's get to it. Key, thank you so much for joining me today. Like I said, I have a feeling from our pre-conversation that we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, thanks, Tamara. It's really nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me to join in.
So tell me, what's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
Let me think about that. So one thing that's kind of fun. So growing up in the East Bay, my family was in the antique business, and it was fun because we all got to be involved with the business, including getting to go to Europe with my mom for buying trips, which was especially fun. So I still have a great interest in antiques and art, though I'm guessing my taste has evolved over the years. And I think that's a big part of the reason I've enjoyed being so involved with Restoration Hardware for almost 20 years now, where I've been on the board.
So I have to know, like, do you have an eye for antiques? Are you able to look at something and be like, that's worth something or that's not? Or like, did you get that skill?
So probably a little bit of that skill, but it was really more about taste and what I like and a point of view about, you know, sort of furniture or furnishings that I like. So it wasn't so much value driven. It's just really a taste level as to, you know, kind of what I liked, which of course was shaped by, you know, the shop and kind of our adventures traveling around buying antiques.
My gosh, I love it. That's not something you hear every day. So thank you for sharing that. And as I think I mentioned to you, I think I've actually been to that antique shop because I grew up in the same area that you did in the East Bay. So I'm going to have to go dig through my photos and see if I have any from Grand Avenue. So I want to actually start with kind of a personal question about just how you figure out opportunities in the marketplace. Because, you know, as I said in my intro, you launched PopChip, which was wildly successful, and now have moved on to Right Rice, which is also gaining incredible traction. But I'm sure you not only see, but also have a plethora of ideas or opportunities come your way. How do you identify opportunities that are worth pursuing, like PopChip and Right Rice?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And it's always fun to talk to different entrepreneurs who have a different path and different process. For me, most of the ideas I've pursued have really come from solving a very personal problem. So in the case of PopChips and Right Rice, they both came from what I love to eat. Just as with PopChips, which I started because I was looking for a healthier snack, I was eating way too many Doritos. I started Right Rice because I found myself cutting back on rice because of all the empty calories and the carbs. Yeah. And I heard from lots of other folks, they were doing the same. And so in both cases, that personal need inspired me to think pretty deeply about what was missing in the market and the opportunity to create something to fill that void.
I want to dig a little bit into Right Rice for a second, because you just, you know, kind of your sharing of, you know, like, I didn't want to eat all these empty calories, but you still want to be full, right? How did you then take that question and that need that you had and start transforming that into an innovation, into an actual product? Like, when you think back to those original steps.
Sure. So again, it starts with, I love rice, but not the empty calories and the carbs. And the rice alternatives that were on the market, you know, like cauliflower rice, you know, that, it, you know, at least for me, don't really have the taste or texture of rice, didn't really do it for me. So I really saw that void in the market. So, you know, the first thing was about having some really clear objectives. And in this case, I wanted to come up with a product that hit on, you know, kind of three key goals. It had to have the taste and texture of rice, which I say is the table stakes, because if it doesn't taste good, no one's going to eat it. I wanted some really clear nutritional goals. And in this case, I wanted to have at least 10 grams of protein and 5 grams of fiber and at least 25% fewer net carbs. So those sort of the nutritional goals. And I wanted it to be really quick and easy to cook. So, you know, mindful of that, and when I took a look at the category and the opportunity, what I found was a way to pack, you know, really nutritious vegetables into a grain of rice. And after a lot of testing and eating, we found the right blend of, you know, lentils and chickpeas and green peas and a little less than 10% rice that really managed to deliver on taste, texture, and nutrition. So an end product that has, you know, more than double the protein of regular rice, 5 times the fiber, and as it turned out, almost 40% fewer net carbs than white rice. And the great thing is it cooked up super easy in about 10 minutes.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the three goals you were saying, I feel like oftentimes with alternative products, when you're kind of the newer kid on the block trying to give an alternative to what's out there, regardless if that's food or a different category, I think the mistake we have to make is we say, well, as long as I have two out of three, right? Or as long as, like, okay, maybe not taste, but oh my God, it's going to be so much healthier, so people will compensate. But there is a level of, I've got to deliver what's already out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, that's, again, but that's sort of the table stakes, right? You've got to get to a certain level to get people's interest and attention. And just as you said, I mean, and this is what got me particularly excited about Right Rice was, you know, usually you have to choose, you know, when you have sort of taste and nutrition and, you know, and cooking and convenience, you have to pick two of three. You don't usually get both. And when we finished developing the product and found this, you know, blend of, you know, the veggies, as we like to say, it's, you know, packed with over 90% vegetables. When we found the ability to do that and how it came together, you know, you didn't have to make that choice and didn't have to make that sacrifice, which is, I think, what's made it especially appealing as a product at this early stage.
So I love talking to people like you who are successful, particularly in the food business, because I think the grocery store is like a microcosm of life. Like, it's super competitive. There's limited space and time. There's a million options for everything. I mean, the cereal aisle is actually my favorite to pick on, because I don't know if you've ever gone down the cereal aisle, but it's like 100 different options of what feel like the same thing. Like, how am I supposed to pick and choose, right? There's just so much noise in this category. But I feel like the grocery store overall is like that, you know? Like, it's all the things we deal with in any business in terms of kind of competition and noise and options and new products constantly coming in and limited shelf space. So I'm curious, when you think about bringing these alternative products and, you know, things like Right Rice to the market, how do you think about approaching this kind of legacy style industry that's still got all of that other kind of conventional products and systems in place?
So for me, the first thing, it's all about offering a truly differentiated product. So if you look at my background and the things I've done, I there's some entrepreneurs who flick a switch and do something new, and I always marvel at how quickly they can, you know, come up with the next big idea. For me, it's, you know, there's, you know, it's obviously very few and much more selective. And that's really because it starts, as I said, about sort of a personal need, something where I have a passion for, but also about a really differentiated product. The rice aisle has seen really little to no innovation in decades, other than the things I call a flour rice and some of the ready-to-eat microwave rice dishes, which really don't fill the demand for compelling innovation. And just as we've been seeing the innovation explode in more traditional categories, you know, milk, egg, breads, even beer, it's finally time for innovation in the rice aisle. So going back to this comment that you made about, you know, having to make choices and sacrifice something, you know, we really hit on all three. You know, we hit on, you know, taste, nutrition, you know, double the protein, five times the fiber, and almost 40% less net carbs. And then it cooks in 10 minutes. So that's sort of one, the product. And I think that's the single most important thing. And then the other thing, when you think about the grocery store, and I love the way you talked about it. It's, to me, I have so much fun going to the grocery store and looking at that microcosm of life.
I can spend hours there.
Exactly. But packaging is really the next critical thing to me. It's sort of, you know, your product and your branding. And when I did Pop Chips, I interviewed 25 design firms kind of all around the country and even over in Europe before picking a terrific firm called Turner Duckworth. And, you know, loved working with them. They did an incredible job. And it really helped us kind of build the brand. And when it came to Right Rice, I, you know, took a look again at sort of some of the firms that were out there. And in this case, I hired a firm called IDEO, a really amazing design firm I'd worked with on a few smaller projects that had a really focused food and beverage group based here in San Francisco. And just like the product, we wanted to come out with something that was really differentiated and striking. And, you know, from my point of view, you know, something that's really simple and clear in terms of its messaging and design. As one of my friends like to say, radical simplicity. You know, it's really easy to create a package with lots of messaging. The bigger challenge is how do you simplify it and provide really focused, limited messaging to try and have that impact on the shelf. So again, for us, the first two key things are to be differentiated are, you know, really a great product and some packaging and branding.
I mean, this is the opposite of what you do. So I'm not sure if, I don't know if you're the right person to ask this question of, but it got me thinking about, you know, you had said kind of some of the innovations that happened in the quote unquote rice category. It was not really innovation, right? Like cauliflower rice, which is funny because I opened up my freezer this morning and I have like 8 bags of it because I keep buying it, wanting to want it. And then I don't cook it because I'm like, almost feels like an afterthought in a freezer bag in some ways. No offense to the people who put that together, but Why do you think so many food companies churn out so many variations and incremental innovation versus what you're doing, which is really bringing something to market that is meaningful and differentiated?
Look, it's really hard to do that. So it's you know, and that's why I think I've been involved with so few brands and products, because it's hard to be really differentiated, and there's only so much innovation you can do. But I think there's pressure on bigger companies who have a place in the market, and they see innovation and they think they want to, you know, do something that's probably more incremental than really differentiated or innovative. And there's just pressure on them to have some newness. And so I think sometimes when you have to do something and you're trying to do a lot, you end up doing things that probably aren't quite as meaningful or as impactful as they could be.
Yeah, that's a great point. There is definitely a lot of pressure to like constantly fill up the shelves with something new that isn't really new. And the last time I was at the grocery store, I like counted how many had fiber like highlighted, but it was like 10% more fiber, 20% more fiber, 10% more fiber plus vitamins, 50% more fiber plus, I don't know, you know, something else. I was like, oh my gosh, it's all the same stuff. Like, it's exhausting. I'm curious, when you think about bringing a new product to market, how do you think about informing the customer in a way that draws them in? Because I think oftentimes with something that's differentiated, the positive is it's differentiated, so it stands out on the shelf. The challenge is, right, we then have to educate consumers like, hey, there's something new. There's a new alternative out there.
So, look, I mean, as I like to say, you know, you create a product and you think you've done a great job because you've created a, you know, innovative product and you've done some great packaging and you get yourself on the shelf and you want to celebrate. But, you know, as you know, that's really just the starting line. I mean, you're just getting started and it's going to be really what happens after that. But, you know, no less important is, you know, creating that product again and packaging and brand and getting it out there. With Pop Chips and now Right Rice, in terms of, you know, that next step, you know, we've been really focused on building a grassroots brand. There's no way we're going to outspend the bigger players in the industry. So we, you know, by necessity, you know, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. We have to be creative and thoughtful about how to drive awareness and trial. And we like to think about how do we find and empower evangelists to tell our story. With Pop Chips, we use both a deep field marketing team. You know, we had kind of several key markets around the country where we had people really leading the sampling process. Again, very grassroots. We used to say one snacker at a time. And we married that with some influencer marketing tools. And keep in mind at that point, this is 10 years ago, social media was just starting to gain traction. With Right Rice, it's the same goal, very much grassroots. But today it's about a very deep integration of social media and influencer marketing. Social media has evolved so much since we launched Pop Chips. I think back when we did launch Pop Chips, Larry King and Ashton Kutcher were having a contest who could get to 1 million Twitter followers first. That was the big news. You know, Facebook didn't even have an advertising platform yet. I mean, they were out there, but there was no advertising model. And Instagram was probably a twinkle in somebody's eye, you know, that hadn't been created yet. So it's changed so much. And so today, you know, you really have this great opportunity to leverage, you know, social media and influencer marketing in ways to, you know, drive awareness and trial and really start to build a brand, you know, in ways, again, when it came to Pop Chips, we really needed that, you know, feet on the street, a field marketing team to really help do that.
What do you think are some of the key tactics that you did, either Pop Chip or Right Rice, but that helped fuel your success?
Gosh. Well, first of all, again, I'm always going to come back to it. It has to be a compelling, differentiated product that people get passionate about. And I think that's, you know, really kind of at the top of the list is, you know, giving people something they believe in and they get passionate about. And when you're trying to build a grassroots brand, you want to share that with people and then empower them to share it with others, because there's no better way to build a brand than evangelists and word of mouth. It's, you know, you go back to the Malcolm Gladwell original book, The Tipping Point, right? And how he talked about connectors and all that. And, you know, I think it's a really powerful model and works. I mean, I know in my life, there's people who, you know, tell me about things that I'm excited to go try. And you know, you want to find those people out in the marketplace. So, you know, great product, getting people's hands and getting them to tell the story. I think that's, you know, probably one of the most important parts of the things that we've tried to focus on and do.
You know, it's interesting. I was, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about how many I guess, messages on Instagram. Those are my A's. I'm not sure exactly what I'm supposed to be calling them when someone sends me the post directly to my inbox, but about like a product they think is cool that they think I should know about. Like that is a major mode of communication today in terms of sharing products. It just didn't even exist even really 5 years ago. Like it's incredible. Kind of to your point about how that's all evolved.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, this whole phenomenon of unboxing, right? And people receiving packages and, you know, sharing that experience. And, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to create kind of a fun way to share our product and our brand that would, you know, give you a chance to reveal itself on social media. So it's a whole new world. It'll be interesting to see where it is 5 or 10 years from now because it's going to keep evolving.
You've said a couple things I want to kind of dig into a little bit. One was you said, you know, it's a differentiation that people are passionate about. And I think that's a really, you said it quickly, but I think it's an important point because you can have a, you can be totally differentiated, but nobody can care. Like it's not valuable. No offense to anyone out there who's in that situation. How did you make sure that that differentiation that you were bringing was something people would actually care about? Or how do you marry those two together?
So again, I come back to your first question about how I make my choices and the businesses I want to get involved in or products to launch. It comes back to like my personal passion. And so I'm a person, especially as I've gotten older, I really sort of trust my gut. Now, of course, I, you know, have a point of view and an opinion about a product and I socialize it with people and talk to folks to really, you know, sort of, you know, do a gut check. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, I like to think it really starts with something that I just really believe in and I think matters. And, you know, again, I validate that by talking to some people and understanding, but you know, it's like, there's lots of opinions and there's people who love focus groups. I've always loved Steve Jobs. He had some great remark when people said, do you do focus groups? And he laughed and said something about, you know, something to the effect of, look, people don't even know what they want. So why am I going to go to them?
Yeah. I hate focus groups. So you're not going to offend me with them. I can't stand them. So.
Yeah. And look, there's a place for them sometimes with flavors or some things you want to try and you might do some things with consumer groups. But generally, I think really great product ideas are born by, you know, entrepreneurs and people who are out there really trying to innovate.
Well, and I think, you know, just on focus groups for a second, I think the challenge, the overarching challenge, aside from groupthink and those kind of other things, is that we're asking consumers to take us to a place they haven't been yet. And that's hard for people to do. That's hard for all of us to do. And the problems that they share with us that we're then trying to solve as the marketers or the, you know, innovators, whatever, are yesterday's problems. And by the time we get it to market, they've moved on. Those problems don't even exist anymore or have changed. So we're behind the game by the time we even get to them. That's
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're totally right. And that's we just see the pace of change today is what's really fun in any product category.
Yeah. So I wanted to go back to what you're saying about, you know, getting trial and then getting repeat. And I wanted to actually, I would love to get your perspective on how you think strategically about those two, because they are very different. I think sometimes when we're bringing a new idea to life into the marketplace, we sometimes kind of blend everything to like, I'm launching the product and I want people to buy my product and be a user of my product, whatever that is. But there really is a fundamental difference between trial and repeat. So how do you strategically think about those two things and linking them?
Well, look, I mean, you hope repeat comes from trial. So I think they're just linked inherently, because if you have a good product that you're able to get people to try and there's demand for it and a place in the market and a place in their lives, you know, they're going to go back and they're going to buy more of it. They're going to tell their friends, right? It's going to get shared. You know, like now with Right Rice, when I hear people talking about, oh my God, like, you know, you're a regular part of our pantry and they're buying us regularly. You know, rice is a slow category. You compare it to snacks, which is, you know, a high velocity part of the store, or higher velocity part of the store, which is even much lower than beverages, right? There's it varies category by category. But when people start, you know, buying it and making it part of the regular consumption, you know, that's how you actually drive velocity, you know, and it's getting shared with other consumers. But it really all starts with trial, and, you know, you have to have a compelling product that people, you know, will try and then go buy more.
To your point about kind of the accelerated rate of change, we were kind of talking about focus groups when you mentioned it, but How, when you look to the future for right rice, how do you think about keeping up with change of consumer demands and competition that'll come in and kind of all the things that you see when you look to the future for right rice?
So look, innovation is absolutely at the core of the DNA of a brand like right rice. The market moves really quickly, and it's important to continue to innovate in order to help lead the creation of, you know, we're trying to create this new category or reinvent the rice category, however you want to put it, but we want to be a leader. And to do that, you have to continue to innovate and stay ahead of the competition. So for us, I mean, again, it's part of our DNA. At the very beginning, we have been working from the day we launched. You know, we originally launched the brand in February 2019. So it's been a little less than a year. And, you know, we launched with a core group of flavors, and we then came out with a couple of new flavors, you know, cilantro lime and Thai curry, just to sort of, you know, expand in some of our retail presence. And then, you know, we've been working almost from day one on a new product line called Right Rice Medley. It's, you might think of it sort of as a next generation Rice-A-Roni, you know, a brand everybody knows well. And in this case, it's a blend of right rice with ancient grains. So we blended right rice with sorghum and quinoa and some other veggies and created this really, you know, tasty medley that's, you know, comes in a fried rice or a harvest pilaf and a Cajun spice. And we were really lucky. We got to launch a second national launch with Whole Foods, which we just launched just recently in the last couple of weeks. And so we're in all the Whole Foods stores with that new product line. So we have both Right Rice and Right Rice Medley and on Amazon. And, you know, it's a great endorsement for a new brand like ours to be doubling our shelf space and presence in the number one natural foods retailer within a year of launching. Now, at the same time, we're working on a handful of other ideas, and we hope to, you know, continue to lead innovation in the rice aisle.
You know, first of all, congratulations on being on in all of the Whole Foods. I will just say for all of us on Launch Street, shelf space is highly valuable. It's like the diamonds of, you know, the grocery store business. So to get that much shelf space is an incredible testament to how well you're doing and how many customers are buying, because they're not giving up shelf space for nothing.
Yeah. Look, they only get to make so many choices. And, you know, we're still earlier in our cycle. As I said, it's only been 11, 12 months since we launched. And, you know, to get the chance to double our space is great, because, again, we're still learning and growing. But they have limited choices. And, you know, they limited space and lots of choices. Everybody wants to get on the shelf of a retailer like Whole Foods or Sprouts or Wegmans or Kroger. And, you know, people are competing for that space. And, you know, to have a chance to be picked among those brands to grow like this already within our first year is a great start. And again, we have a long ways to go.
By the way, lemon pepper is one of my favorites, just so you know.
that's actually one of my favorite flavors as well.
Yeah, no, I liked it. And I'm one of those annoying gluten-free, nut, like, you know, dairy-free people. So I'm like, yes, an alternative. I'm curious.
Well, you'll have to try the right rice medley. So we'll see what you think.
I'm looking forward to it.
It just came out.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that, because I had my eye on right rice. It might have been there and I missed it because I was looking specifically for right rice. But, you know, you had mentioned innovation. So as the kind of, you know, leader of the team, how do you ensure that your team is innovating and staying ahead, that it's not just all coming from you?
Look, I think it's the DNA of our brand and who we are. So I can't imagine anyone joining the team that isn't an innovator, you know, in everything they do. So it's just part of what we do and what we're thinking about. We're always in the stores, always on the shelf. We're looking at new products and ideas, looking at flavor trends. So it's, you know, it's just part of what we're doing. And it's, you know, I can almost not imagine not being focused on innovation.
I think the cool thing about the food industry overall is you really, more so than a lot of other categories, have to really have your eye on customer behaviors and expectations and flavors and new innovations. I mean, it really does, while the rice aisle in itself hadn't seen innovation, I mean, wouldn't you say that food overall moves quickly?
Oh, it's no. I mean, I think the pace of change and innovation in food in general has just been incredible. And, you know, especially you look at the trends of what's going on with plant-based foods and in the meat and the meatless category and non-dairy. I think, you know, somebody sent me something, you know, every big commodity category has seen a segment of its market taken by these, you know, new premium price alternatives or innovative, healthier alternatives. I mean, almond milk and milk, you know, artisanal granola and, you know, what you want in the, you talk about the cereal category, you know, craft beers and big beer, you know, it's category by category. And it's incredible to see the pace of change and, you know, how quickly, you know, you see additional brands. Look at categories like kombucha, right? There's, you know, I can't remember how many years ago you never even had heard of it. And now, you know, it's you know, fills the beverage racks at lots of the grocery stores like Whole Foods.
Well, that's the part that amazes me. Just kombucha is a great example of it. It wasn't even an alternative on the shelves 5-10 years ago, and now it's gotten an entire section all to itself. Like, it's incredible to me that it went from, you know, nothing to just a part of the common food choices that everybody knows about.
Exactly. And there's some great, you know, there's some great products like Health Aid kombuchas I'm a fan of. I mean, you see some of these and they're just so good. And, you know, we keep them stocked in our refrigerator.
What do you think is the, if you looked across all those examples you just gave, they're really so brilliant when you think about it. What do you think is the common theme or kind of the, I don't want to say keys to success because that makes it sound like here are the top three, but the things that kind of really drove the success of those disruptors in those categories, and for you too, for Right Rice and PopChip.
You know, again, I'm gonna go back to meaningful innovation and really differentiated products that really fill a need. So, you know, look, you can't just create a great product. It has to be something people want and demand. Now, they might not know it yet until they try it or as the category starts to grow. I mean, what we're seeing in the rice category, you know, is, you know, like in place like Whole Foods, there's, you know, people are getting it and really understanding what we're doing, but there's a much broader audience that we want to, you know, start to educate about, you know, this sort of veggie rice that really tastes like rice. Like, our big challenge in some cases is people are, like your comment about cauliflower rice, so many people think of veggie rice as cauliflower rice and have dismissed it because it just doesn't taste like rice. And so as a result, that's a lot of people's association. So now we need to educate people that there's a veggie rice that really does taste like rice and, you know, performs like rice, tastes like rice, and it gives you this extra nutrition. So in all these categories we talked about, like, I think the key to success is a product that provides something really compelling that consumers want and need. And, you know, they're growing. I mean, they're growing because of that demand. They're being pulled by consumers and, you know, even the grocery stores like feel that need and the demand. You'll see grocery stores now with plant-based food sections and the like. So it's just a trend that isn't going to change. And again, all driven by, you know, strong consumer demand.
It's fascinating, the whole kind of plant-based that you mentioned. Was it a Burger King has the meatless burger? I think a couple of them do now. Like, it is amazing to see how that has taken off in the last year for something that felt so niche for so long and then just hit it.
Oh, yeah. Who would have ever thought you're going to see now, you know, Denny's and right. Dunkin' Donuts and, of course, Burger King, you know, with you know, meatless options. And, you know, we have a lot of local spots here in San Francisco that now have the Impossible Burger on their menu, or the Beyond. But, you know, it's incredible to see how it's accelerating and how wide the acceptance is becoming.
You had mentioned just a second ago about kind of the baggage surrounding cauliflower rice. How do you, and maybe it's just inherent in kind of the packaging and the product, to your point about differentiation, but you do have to overcome that baggage, right? That's been created by the alternatives that didn't quite cut it. How do you manage that when you know, like, okay, people are going to be hesitant because they think it's going to be like cauliflower rice and people don't like that generally.
Yeah. Look, I mean, when I did my first set of demos at Whole Foods, you know, myself, people would walk by and I say, you want to try some veggie rice? And a lot of people would just look at me, smile and keep walking. And kind of early on that first day I did demos, I said to some people, it's not cauliflower rice. And it amazed me. Huh. I'd say 60 or 70% of the people stopped immediately, turned and either came back and bought, you know, tried the product and bought it, or at least had a conversation like, oh, it's not cauliflower rice, what is it? Like, there is such a strong association. So that's really what made me realize how, you know, sort of the impact cauliflower rice and the need to differentiate from it. And in our case, look, first of all, it's about getting people to try it. You try the product. It has a really nice taste and consistency. And, you know, a lot of people think it's just like rice. I think it's really close. And I, you know, again, I love rice. It takes on flavors and sauces like rice does, which cauliflower rice doesn't as well. So, you know, getting people to try it is, you know, the top of the list. But beyond that, it's, I think, again, going back to kind of the influencer marketing and having people sharing it and people talking about it and being part of the conversation. And then, you know, look, we're doing a little bit of paid, you know, sort of stuff on social media and whatnot. And in some of those cases, you'll see us playing with things around cauliflower rice. Like, you know, we'll say things like, right, rice cooks faster than cauliflower rice thaws. You know, we've got some, kind of some fun lines. Or, you know, I think we like to say, you know, right, rice is the veggie rice cauliflower wishes it were. So this notion of veggie rice is really powerful because, you know, again, plant-based, you know, protein-rich foods is what people or a lot of people are looking for. And so what we need to do is get that in front of people and say there's really a new kind of veggie rice that will deliver on what you're looking for in terms of the experience.
I do think, though, that kind of your comment about, you know, I said it's not cauliflower and they turned around. I think it's those little moments in the marketplace that can change the trajectory of the business when you realize, those are the moments where I think you realize those insights are like, oh, this matters, right? Like if I say this, I can actually get people to try it versus this, which just people keep walking. And I just think that's fascinating. And I think all too often we don't spend enough time in the field just talking to people and then kind of logging in our mind or more formally the things that we say that resonate or don't, because sometimes it's accidental and off the cuff, but it actually impacts the brand and the business.
Look, I like to say we learn every day. And my favorite thing about the businesses I've done over the years is just the learning experience. I mean, we learn so much all the time. And I think that, you know, the people I know I like to have on our team and how I like to think about myself, it's just that natural sort of curiosity, right? Like I can tell you're that way. Like you just ask questions and you're thinking about it. You're challenging thinking. And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer. As one of my favorite entrepreneurs says, you know, it's not who's right, it's what's right. And, you know, I think there's, you know, so much great thinking out there and learning is what it's all about. So every day, so that insight I got in the Whole Foods store has really helped shape some of the way we're thinking about it, just as you described.
So before we kind of close out, I have to just tell you a very quick story now that I can admit it, that now that we're connecting and having this interview. So I bought right rice and I have cauliflower rice and my kids are well aware that I tend to swap out stuff for the healthier version, but they often call me on it. They're like, oh, are these the gluten-free pancakes, Mom? Like they know, right? So I, one week, I was like, I'm going to do regular rice for them one day. And then the next day I did the cauliflower rice. And sure enough, they were like, oh, this is horrible. And I happen to kind of like cauliflower rice. I don't mean to pick on it, but it's a great example of just not quite cutting it in a lot of ways. But they like totally rebelled against the dinner. They're like, oh, is this that cauliflower stuff? Like, and I didn't say anything. I just said it's a, you know, stir fry. And then the next night I used the right rice and they ate it up without saying anything. And I was like, aha. Because that to me was like the best test of, does it really live up to everything it says it's going to be, is can I put it in there and nobody notices I swapped it out?
By the way, I love that story. And we get so many people that send us messages like, I tricked my husband. I mean, kids, lots of kids. Because look, kids, that's when I was thinking of starting Right Rice, one of the first things I heard from a lot of people was, you know, it's one of the only foods my kids eat. I give it to them because it's so easy to feed them. I just wish it were more nutritious. So moms have loved that there's a more nutritious rice to give them that the kids like, and whether it's the flavor, the, you know, or original, you can season it however you like. I mean, it's been something kids have really liked. And I just love that, those kinds of stories where just what you described, people have no idea what they've just eaten and they think they ate rice. And it's fun to see that reaction. I call it the surprise and delight.
Yeah, no, I love it. And we have this thing in my house where when I do a meal, I take no offense, but it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Do we want this again or not? Like, you got to eat what I cooked. I'm not cooking twice, but like, did we like this? Does this stay on the rotation or no? And that meal with right rice, they were like, yeah, this was really good. So it wasn't even just that they thought it was rice. It was that they actually enjoyed it. So, but I had to
love that.
Once we scheduled you, I wanted to do the test. Cause I was like, well, I don't want to have them on if it doesn't really live up to it. Let me go test. And then that week it was just hysterical. So anyway, so before we close out, where can people go? You said in a minute with Whole Foods, but where else can they go to get right rice or if they want to learn more?
Sure. So, you know, look, you can find right rice in all the Whole Foods stores, all the Kroger stores and banners like King Super and Fred Meyer and QFC and Ralph's. you know, kind of around the country. Sprouts, Wegmans, you know, we're obviously on Amazon, which is great. And then some of the sites like Good Eggs and Fresh Direct and Thrive Market. So we've got a kind of pretty broad presence. And look, you just go to, you know, rightrice.com and find, we're, you know, learn a lot about the brand and our new product line, the Medley line, see where you can find it near you. Or you can just go on Instagram, you know, just at rightrice and, you know, follow us there.
I want to switch up the last question and I want to ask you, instead of kind of your final piece of advice, because I feel like you really were clear about that around be different, right? Be differentiated and something people care about. What I'd love to know is, in your rightrice and in your entrepreneurial journeys, what experience did you have along the way that surprised you, whether that's because it worked better than you expected or worse than you expected?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think what has surprised me most along the way is the passion people have for food and food products. And it's not just food. My world happens to be more food, although, again, I'm involved with Restoration Hardware, and I think we see that same passion. But so I guess the passion that people have and excitement for compelling products and brands. And, you know, I'll never forget, and it's happening now with rightrice, where I'm getting messages on Instagram or emails from people who are just so excited and, you know, you know, just they have this crazy passion about it. And it happened a lot, obviously, with Pop Chips, right? I have people send me these messages and, you know, say, you know, like I remember some guy sent me a note saying, you know, Pop Chips was the best thing since Viagra and beer. You know, but you just see this passion from consumers, and it's so fun when you create something. And again, rightrice, we're so early, so, you know, it's been less than a year, so, you know, I can get too excited about it. But the early reaction sort of reminds me of what we saw evolve with Pop Chips, where you really get this strong passion from people. And again, those become your evangelists. Those are the people who share your story, and that's how you build, I think, brands like ours.
I love it. I think that's a great kind of comment and experience to end on. So Keith, thank you so much for joining me today. It was great to kind of learn more about rightrice and Pop Chip and your journey, and just for all of us on Launch Street to really think about that kind of intersection of passion and differentiation, because I think it's a powerful one. So thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun chatting.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.